Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's time for our weekly update on the November elections. We're going to be talking here with Mark Hemingway and Molly Hemingway about President Obama's reaction to the Orlando attack, along with Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump's reaction as well. A possible meeting between Hillary Clinton and Sanders to iron things out before the Democratic National Convention, and some of Donald Trump's poll numbers, his relationship with the press. Mark Hemingway is a regular guest. He's senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be back.
And Molly Hemingway, senior editor for The Federalist. Molly, welcome back.
It's great to be here with you.
Let's talk a little bit first about the incumbent before we talk about those who would like to take his place in November. President Obama gave a speech shortly after the Orlando attack. What did you make of it, Molly?
It was an interesting speech, mostly because his anger seemed reserved not for ISIS, which had just committed its second very successful attack on U.S. soil, killing 49 Americans and injuring four more dozen fairly seriously. He wasn't so angry about that. He was extremely angry about Donald Trump, which, you know, is just an interesting approach to take when you're commander-in-chief and dealing with threats on U.S. soil. He really thought that Donald Trump's rhetoric is bad and not helpful. And also, he took umbrage at Trump's insistence that people identify Islamic terrorism by its actual nature. So Trump keeps saying, you need to say radical Islam. You know, Hillary Clinton said, sure, fine, I'll say radical Islam. But Obama said, you know, it's not some magical incantation, and nobody thinks that if I say these words that the problem will go away. But the weird thing was that he was unable to say the words, thereby giving them some kind of magical power they seem to have over him. It was a bizarre speech, except that it's kind of typical for President Obama's response to terror. He seems little laid back about it, not very angry about it, but really continues to be angry at domestic political opponents.
Mark?
It wasn't just that he did refuse to say radical Islam and said it was a talking point and those other things. He himself specifically referred to them as nihilistic organizations, which is just baffling. I mean, you have to apply a label to them somehow, and the label does matter in terms of, you know, our priorities, in terms of how we connect these things to reality. I mean, yes, it is true that we should understand it as a radical version of Islam and not, you know, Islam itself. But if it's on the spectrum of things related to Islamic countries and things that are happening in Islamic countries, that is going to dictate our foreign policy. And at the same time, you know, you sound detached from reality when you say that these people are nihilists, which is, it's simply not true. They're nihilists. They believe in very specific things, and understanding what those specific things are will help you combat them. And it's really something, I think, that rightly bothers people.
Molly, I want to come back to something you said there about the kind of the blame domestic issues first with President Obama in cases like this. If I were advising the president, of course, I'm going to be cautious in every case, but I would advise the president simply to say, look, this is a tragedy. We need to pray and do everything we can for the victims and the victims' families. And we need to suspend judgment on blame until the proper law enforcement agencies that are hard at work have progressed in their investigation. Why can't President Obama simply say that? Why does he need to use this as an opportunity?
Well, the interesting thing is that of the presidential contenders, there was a contender who said just that, and it was Gary Johnson of the Libertarian Party. And you know that things are bad when the Libertarians are seeming to be the most sensible people on the block. But he does seem to have a philosophy that you make sure that you take advantage of incidents for political gain, and it and that was playing out here. Now, having said that, Mark and I were talking yesterday about how great it would have been if we had a leader, I mean, not just President Obama, but anyone on the national stage, who said that what needed to happen was that we all need to come together as Americans. There was a huge terror attack on American soil. We all need to spend time grieving the dead and, you know, mourning the situation before we talk about political responses to same, whether that is foreign policy or domestic changes. And we don't have anybody at a national level providing that kind of leadership or encouraging Americans to come together at this moment. Instead, it's just all political, politicization of grief itself. And it is a very dangerous moment in time that we responded to a terror attack by going after political opponents, I think.
I agree with everything Molly just said, but I just want to add one other wrinkle here, I think, about Obama's response, which is to say it's not just a way to, you know, take advantage of, you know, political momentum. It's also a way of ducking accountability. The worst terror attack on American soil since 9/11 just happened on President Obama's watch. He is the, you know, as President of the United States, he is the chief law enforcement officer of the United States. Any way you look at what happened here, the FBI just botched their investigation of this guy to a pretty terrible degree. And there's all kinds of questions we should be asking about federal law enforcement agencies and other people that failed to do their job here. And by making this all of a sudden about a broader domestic political debate and one that he can pin on his political opponents, it's a way for Obama to duck accountability for the fact that this happened on his watch. And I, you know, it's a canny political move, but again, it's, you know, also incredibly divisive, and it's the kind of thing that just, you know, continues to erode trust in our government. And in the long term, it really undermines the trust that we have that they're going to keep us safe.
Molly, let's talk about both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump's responses to the Orlando attack.
Yeah, so Hillary Clinton had the more traditional response, where she did talk about the problems with terrorism and then immediately pivoted to a call for restricting Second Amendment rights, coming up with gun control measures. I think she is supportive of bans on certain types of assault rifles, as she calls them, and making it so that people who are put on a secret list without any official standards could be prohibited from purchasing weapons. Now, as it happens, this guy who shot up everyone in Orlando was removed off of those terror lists, so it wouldn't have actually had any effect on the terror watch list. It wouldn't have had any effect on anything that was going on. And also, there are something like 9 million guns of the type that he used currently in this country. So unless someone's calling for a brutal government control and seizure of those guns, that also would not have had any effect on this shooting. Compare that to Donald Trump, who thought that if his ban on Muslims entering the country had gone into effect, that would have helped solve this situation. In fact, this man who shot up the club was born in America. His parents are immigrants, but he was born here 30 years ago. So his proposal also would have nothing to do or wouldn't solve any of the problems in play. So they both used the tragedy as a way to go back to their hobby horses of their own political solutions to various problems.
Mark, what did you make of the two hopefuls and their response to Orlando?
Well, it was interesting that Hillary Clinton did kind of break with Obama and did, in fact, use the phrase radical Islam in her response. I mean, I think that Obama is feeling a bit empowered, and it is sort of telling of his particularly uniquely ideological worldview when it comes to this sort of internationalist, globalist view he has of things. And Hillary Clinton is trying to win an election here, and you know, it's possible that she may be a little more grounded in reality when it comes to her acknowledging the threat of radical Islam. But I did think that was, you know, an interesting response. As for Trump's response, I mean, it was just, frankly, the initial response was just appalling. He was like saying, he tweeted out something about, you know, people were congratulating him, and I, you know, for being right on Islamic terrorism. Well, you know, first off, I think, you know, a lot of people feel that, you know, that the Obama administration and other people have been de-emphasizing the threat of ISIS. And so, you know, that's not necessarily a unique perspective to say that, you know, Donald Trump is, you know, some hero for acknowledging this. It's just ridiculous. And never mind, 100 people just died. And to put yourself at the center of this and saying you deserve congratulations is just really kind of appalling. And it's another thing, I think, that is turning off voters from Donald Trump, or I should say it's turning off the independents and people that need to be persuaded by Donald Trump. This is exactly the kind of thing that he does that tends to really make people be off-put by him.
Does that help explain, Molly, why Donald Trump's numbers, I didn't want to get to this till a little bit later, but it fits so nicely here. Does that help explain that the more we get toward general, Donald Trump's numbers get worse and worse?
Well, I think it's too early to say that this is a trajectory that he will continue on, but certainly the numbers that are coming out recently are disastrous for him. And he has extremely high unfavorable ratings. He is dropping behind Hillary Clinton by, I think it was 12 points. Even in polls that he had previously showed him narrowly beating her, he is dropping behind her. This shows that there's a lot of Democratic coalescing behind Hillary Clinton, but also that Trump's behavior in recent weeks has been turning off a lot of voters. I think for the first time you saw that a majority of men now find him unfavorable. He's always done poorly with women and minorities and whatnot, but even white men, I think, have joined the anti-Trump train. So that doesn't necessarily mean that they will stay there, and Donald Trump is running against Hillary Clinton, who is a very undesirable candidate, although she seems to at least understand that she needs to reach out to Republicans or conservatives or just not totally mess up this race, and she will get it. But his comments, particularly on Judge Curiel, seem to turn off a lot of people. That's when his numbers seem to tank the most in these polls. That was when he was saying that the judge, who is an American citizen born in Indiana, could not be trusted to hear a lawsuit against Trump because he's a Mexican. I think that's his ancestry is Mexican. So that didn't seem to go over very well for him. And, you know, people keep waiting to see if Donald Trump will try something new, but it seems like that might not be happening. And in fact, the media seemed to be turning on him, which was something people predicted, but they weren't sure because he was such a non-conventional candidate who helped TV people in their ratings so much. But, you know, the media have started to turn. They're not covering every single speech as much as they used to. So those numbers might continue to decline.
The big concern with Trump was that he would get into the general election, he would immediately fall behind Hillary Clinton in the polls, 5 to 10 points, and just stay there throughout the rest of the election. And it's particularly a bad concern because we're in a situation here where Trump has very few tools to fight back. He doesn't have much of a campaign organization. He's not raising money. And at this point in time, based on the numbers we're seeing initially, and I would just caution that, as we've seen throughout this entire electoral season, absolutely anything could happen, and, you know, things could come out of nowhere and completely reshape the race. Having said that, the scenario where Trump coasts through the rest of the election 5 to 10 points down in the election to Hillary is looking like a best-case scenario according to his latest polls. I mean, it cannot be stressed how bad these polls are. I mean, Hillary Clinton is winning solidly in Kansas in the latest poll, and this is a state that Mitt Romney won by 11 points in 2012. The Washington Post poll that just came out shows that 53% of blue-collar white voters have an unfavorable true view of Donald Trump. Now, if a majority of blue-collar white voters have an unfavorable view of Donald Trump, who exactly is supposed to vote for him again? It's really, I mean, these should be sending off like klaxons in the RNC to the point where, you know, people really need to be thinking about heading into convention about whether or not they want to stick with this guy, because, you know, aside from his, you know, completely unreliable, you know, behavior and all of the absurd things he does, he's looking like, you know, the worst candidate in modern history at this point in the game.
I just want to add one thing, too, which is last week when things started going really south for Donald Trump, when he was obsessed with going after the judge judge in his lawsuit, people started talking a little bit about whether the Republicans would try to find a new candidate before it was too late. Hugh Hewitt had said, the Republican Party is not a suicide pact. There's no need, if you see where things are going, to continue down this trajectory. And I thought it was a little too early to say, and I thought that the next 2 weeks would really be determinative in terms of whether people wanted to find a new candidate. But these, you know, here we are a few days out, and many people are very worried. Even there was a poll showing that people were most dissatisfied with Trump's response to Orlando compared to Hillary or Obama's. And that's a disaster because Obama's response was awful. Today, Donald Trump said that he wanted to meet with the NRA to review whether people could lose gun rights without due process. And it was a little unclear, like all things, he says, what he meant. But it seemed to suggest that he had not developed from his old position of believing that you can lose gun rights without due process. If he goes against gun rights, if he's making this campaign into a personal vendetta against a judge, if he starts to sell out various other issues as well, like pro-life or whatnot, in a significant fashion, I think you might see a revolt at the convention.
Molly Hemingway, senior editor for The Federalist, and Mark Hemingway, senior writer for The Weekly Standard. When we come back, we'll continue our update on the November elections. We'll stay on Donald Trump, talk about him pulling the press credentials of The Washington Post. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Pilgrim Lutheran, Santa Monica, California. Emmanuel Lutheran, Terre Haute, Indiana. Trinity Lutheran, San Angelo, Texas. Trinity Lutheran and Emmanuel Lutheran, Holloway, Minnesota. St. John Lutheran, Schaumburg, Illinois. Our Savior Lutheran, Pipestone, Minnesota. Real Lutheran Fellowship, Rochester, Minnesota. Living Word Lutheran Church, The Woodlands, Texas. St. James Lutheran, Logansport, Indiana. St. John's Lutheran, State Center, Iowa, and Trinity Lutheran, West Chicago, Illinois. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support, the Issues Etc. 300.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th Century. The 11th Century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking to Mark Hemingway and Molly Hemingway about the November elections. Mark, staying on the subject of Donald Trump, this last week he pulled the press credentials of the Washington Post. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, journalists have a very high opinion of themselves, and the idea that it would be, you know, sacrosanct that they would have access to a candidate and would cause this, you know, big stink about it. I can see where they would be frustrated, and I can see where the Washington Post would make a big deal out of it, but the reality is there's a lot of media outlets don't treat presidential candidates that fairly. I'm kind of on the fence as to whether or not this was a savvy move by Trump. You know, certainly it's not going to bother Republican voters that he's, you know, keeping the Post at a distance. I will say this, which is that Hillary Clinton has not given a press conference in over 6 months. And the media outcry about Donald Trump banning one media outlet, when, by the way, there's one thing you can say about Donald Trump, it's that he spends a lot of time talking to media and generally giving these people what they want. He's not exactly a guy who, you know, disdains press coverage. The fact that they spent more time bleeding about this Washington Post thing than they have in the last 6 months about the fact that Hillary Clinton won't let anyone in from the media near her campaign without being under expressly favorable and perfect conditions, it tells you a lot about where the media stands on, you know, how rigorously they're going to challenge presidential candidates. And the answer is that, you know, they only seem to make this an issue with candidates they don't care that much about or don't agree with ideologically.
I want to say something, though, which is that the Washington Post really did do a bad job with a particular story on Donald Trump. I get that it's difficult to cover him and accurately convey what he's saying because he speaks in such a weird way and he's so vague. He wants to suggest things without being clear about them. But he had talked about Obama's response to Orlando, and he was saying, you know, there's something weird going on there. And he said that about 20 different ways. And the Washington Post headline was, Donald Trump says Obama is complicit in Orlando terror attacks. And I understand that Trump was suggesting that something was not quite right with President Obama. But there are like a million different explanations for what that could mean. And to specifically give one of those interpretations and run with it as the headline in a news story, not in an editorial or an analysis piece or whatnot, that is really unfair. And it's why people have a hard time believing the media when they talk about Donald Trump or when they say things about him, because they're not doing a very good job of being accurate. Unfortunately for them, he's not very precise, but that doesn't give them the right to say things that are untrue.
Well, Molly's right about that. Having said that, this episode also underscores how slippery Donald Trump is about some of this stuff. You're right. It was totally unfair that Donald Trump said some of this stuff and that the Washington Post put the absolute worst construction on it and ran with that. At the same time, Donald Trump just tweeted out the link to some Breitbart story today about, I think it was in Hillary's emails, there was some confidential memo or something about the United States or Obama's administration funding Al-Qaeda in Iraq for something, and that was the organization that later became ISIS. And Donald Trump was like, see, I had a point, you know. And so, like, on one hand, he's trying to deny that he said anything shady and it was unfair to the Washington Post to imply this. But after the fact, when it suits his purposes, Donald Trump does say things like this.
Okay, but
you know,
again,
I'm not defending the Post.
On the Senate floor, Hillary Clinton in 2001 or 2002 was quoting newspaper headlines about how Bush knew about 9/11. And the Washington Post didn't say then that she was saying that Bush was complicit in the attacks. And that was a much more direct statement. So I understand what you're saying, but they do play this unevenly. They give the benefit of the doubt to certain candidates. They do the opposite with others. And it is okay for a candidate to ice a paper out of coverage when they're being that uneven.
I don't necessarily disagree on that. I'm just pointing out that it really is genuinely difficult for the media to pin him down on stuff. At the same time, you know, I also understand it's not fair that you go with the worst construction of everything he says.
Let's talk about a Clinton-Sanders meeting. Has there been one? Will there be one? What's going on there? Molly?
I believe they did meet yesterday, actually. I know that they need to hash out some things because of Sanders continuing in the race, and he wants to have his agenda items taken care of, and Hillary Clinton would like to have him unify behind her, get his supporters behind her. The thing is, I think they already are starting to, and I think that the need, that the leverage that Bernie Sanders has might be waning. It'll be interesting to see how things head into the convention.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. You know, all the national polls seem to show that the Democratic Party is solidifying around Hillary Clinton, and there was a lot of wondering there for a while because Bernie Sanders supporters were really passionate and kept saying they would never vote for Hillary. Well, I mean, it looks like everybody's just sort of coming home and are going to support Hillary. You know, again, like Molly said, that could change going into the convention. You know, as we've mentioned before on the show, there are supposedly big plans of of bystander supporters to stage massive protests and disrupt the convention and do all these other things. I suppose it's possible that, you know, if they really follow through on disruptive tactics at the convention, it could, you know, launch a whole new narrative for the Democratic Party and cause people to move away from Hillary. But it's also true to say that even though people are still sort of rallying around Hillary, one thing that is true in the polls, well, Hillary Clinton is still solidly beating Trump in all the polls and shouldn't be too worried about getting elected at this point in time. It's also true that you see a huge number of dissatisfied voters in the polls. You see more people declining to support either major party candidate in the polls than I have seen in my adult lifetime covering politics, in decades. So that is, you know, tells you something about the status of the race. I mean, people are supporting Hillary over Trump, but it does also, it's another data point, I think, that would show that the Republican Party is not a suicide pact, and they might look at somebody to replace Trump on the ticket, because Hillary Clinton's support is really soft, and she really does need to shore up the Democratic base in key ways.
In that vein, Mark, your publication, The Weekly Standard, this morning wrote about a former Mitt Romney fundraiser who is trying to do a test case of getting a spot on the ballot kind of reserved for an alternate slash third party candidate. How realistic is that?
So it's my understanding, it's one of the big issues about getting a third party person in the race or issues of ballot access. So, like, the deadline to be on the ballot in November for Texas and some other big states has already passed, and as time passes, more and more states' deadlines are going to pass. This new effort is kind of modeled after the Ross Perot campaign. I forget if it was 92 or 96. They used actually a third-party organization to secure ballot access before Perot, I think, was even officially in the race at the time. And it was reasonably successful in getting him on all the ballots. Now, having said that, the state ballot deadlines, it's my understanding from talking to a lot of Republican folks who've looked into third-party stuff, for these campaign guys that know all the rules and stuff, the deadlines themselves are not insurmountable. I mean, it's not easy. You know, the figure I heard thrown around would take about $25 million to put into lawsuits around the country. But the legal precedents are pretty clear. They're generally biased toward getting people on the ballot as opposed to taking them off. And if somebody wanted to do a serious effort, and it looks like this is exactly what this is, to make sure that there was a space on the ballot in every state for a third-party candidate, third party that wasn't the Libertarian, to get into the race, then this could do that.
Molly, you recently defended Hillary Clinton from some criticism leveled against her about benefiting from her husband's political career. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I keep hearing people say that Hillary Clinton is where she is in life because of her marriage to Bill Clinton, and it's totally true. It's absolutely true, but every time I want to make that critique, I have to acknowledge that I am where I am in my life because of my husband, so it seems totally, it would be hypocritical for me to critique someone for that. So I kind of wanted people to just understand that it is absolutely true that Hillary Clinton is able to run for president and be in such a position of strength solely due to who her husband is and how she stayed married to him, and how that got her various positions, including that she was able to run for Senate from a state that she never lived in because she was First Lady, and how she was able to serve as Secretary of State, however disastrous her tenure might have been there because of being a senator and running for president because of who her husband is. But really, it just shows how the patriarchy can be good and how marriage is a very strong institution that helps women. And I don't condone how corrupt the Clintons are, but I do think I think marriage is a good thing, and it helps both men and women, and Hillary Clinton is one such beneficiary.
Mark, what's this story about Trump saying something about soldiers stealing money in Iraq?
Trump tweeted out something earlier today about how, there were millions of dollars, or if not billions of dollars, in reconstruction funds that were distributed during the Iraq War for various purposes to people that had been harmed by the war effort. And Donald Trump implied that there were soldiers over there that had stolen millions of dollars. And it was just a really, like, baffling claim. I mean, there's no real evidence of this. And from what I can tell, actually, the Army did have all kinds of anti-fraud efforts and other things like that. I mean, I don't think anybody walks away thinking that somehow, you know, a hardy band of American soldiers got away with, you know, millions of dollars or whatever, living high on the hog because they robbed a bunch of taxpayer cash in a war zone. And, but it's just an absurd claim. And again, you know, why? What is the political benefit of implying this, that American soldiers are dishonorable thieves? I mean, it's exactly the kind of thing, you know, it's one thing to turn off independent voters and Democratic voters and Republican nominee, but it's quite another thing when you go after the integrity of American servicemen. I mean, Republican voters, that's the kind of thing that is like appalling to their core. You know, the Republican Party is allegedly the party that, you know, cares about the military in terms of duty, honor, and service. And more to that, and more to the point, an overwhelming number of people in the military or military veterans that tend to skew heavily Republican. So there's no practical political gain for spouting off on this, and I don't understand why he does it.
Okay, so once again, he was being vague enough that some of his most devoted fans say that he was actually talking about Iraqi soldiers stealing the money or whatnot. But having said that, I think he does communicate in a way that makes sense to people. There was much waste, fraud, and mismanagement of funds in the Iraqi and Afghan warfighting efforts. There was horrible oversight. There was all sorts of outsourcing that enabled outright theft and other problems. And so it is a very bizarre thing for someone who wants to be commander-in-chief and who wants military support to say, but it's not quite as crazy as people are making it out to be,
well,
I don't think.
That's my final question for you, Molly, with only about 30 seconds here. When I look at some of what the Trump campaign puts out via social media, does he want to win or does he just want to keep running and saying what he has to say in that outlet?
I do not know how to answer that. One of the things that I'm most curious about, I have always been open-minded to the claim of so many Trump fans that he's not only going to win, he's going to win in a landslide. I've been just waiting to kind of see how that might happen or what their plan is. Nothing about what he's doing suggests that that is his goal. At the same time, we all know that everything in the Trump universe is about winning or losing. Remember, Mitt Romney is a loser because he didn't win against Barack Obama. Well, what does that make Donald Trump right now, down 12 points or whatever it is against Hillary Clinton, other than a really world-class loser, unless he has a plan for how he's going to win? Or there's always been the question, is he actually going to go all the way through to the end, or is he going to look for an escape of some kind? His campaign doesn't make a lot of sense. On the other hand, he had enough success in the Republican primary that I think there should be some benefit of the doubt given to him that he does have some larger strategy.
You can read Molly and Mark Hemingway's columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Mark Hemingway is senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, thank you so much.
Thanks again.
And Molly Hemingway, senior editor for The Federalist. Molly, thank you.
Great to be here with you.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to be talking about the Quran and homosexuality. It's a good conversation we need to have, especially in light of the Orlando shootings. Dr. Adam Francisco will be our guest. We'll also review the movie The Conjuring 2. Ted Giese will be our guest. The Issues Etc. book of the month is called Being Lutheran. It is a book that is intended for people who don't know what Lutheran is, and even if you do, a great review. Find out more about it at our website, issuesetc.org, Being Lutheran, or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. book of the month. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
What would you say if someone asked you to explain the Trinity? Would you begin with Scripture, the creeds, or some clever analogy? And how are Christ and the gospel at the center of this fundamental Christian teaching? Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Carl Beckwith has written a new book in the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic series. It's titled The Holy Trinity. You can save $5 by pre-ordering The Holy Trinity at logia.org. LOGIA.org.
Hi, this is Pastor Clayton from Zion Lutheran Church of Muskuda, Illinois, a proud supporter of Issues Etc. Zion is a congregation firmly grounded in God's grace given in the Word and Sacraments, where we treasure the timeless beauty of the liturgy. Zion is also a vibrant, young, family-friendly congregation where you would be warmly welcomed. Zion is located at 101 South Railway Street in Muskuda, Illinois, and we would love to share God's gifts of grace with you. For more information, please visit our website at zionmuskuda.com.